Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at dukehealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Will Michaels. You might have heard there's been a compromise on the state budget. But given its length and complexity, the budget and the corresponding money report together are more than 1,000 pages, there's a lot more to learn. In a minute, we'll look at how much the budget spends on healthcare with WUNC's Jason DeBruin. But first, let's talk about education. It is by far the category we spend the most money on, and the way the legislature funds public education in North Carolina can be complicated. So, while it's only been a couple days and there's still a lot to unpack, let's dive into what we know and what we don't about how we're funding schools for the next 2 years with WUNC's education reporter, Liz Schlemmer. Every year when it's budget time, we talk about teacher raises, and we know that there are raises for public school teachers in this budget. But when you dig down into the details, what do you find?
Republicans are calling this a 5% raise for teachers over 2 years. But that's if you count the annual increases that teachers always get for another year of service. They're on these salary schedules where each year they get a bump in pay. So this change in the salary schedule is really more like a 1.3% raise this year and then again next year, in addition to what they would always receive. That amounts to about $50 or $60 more per month, depending on how many years of experience they have. And there are some concerns that I'm hearing from teachers about how far that's actually going to go, especially considering the rising costs. I talked to Tamika Walker-Kelly, who's the president of the North Carolina Association of Educators.
Inflation is something that hits all of us. And so we know that these raises don't currently keep pace to the inflation that we are seeing right now. And so our educators still need meaningful raises to keep up with what we have asked them to do during this time period and since the last time that we have passed a budget.
There are, in addition to raises, also bonuses. So most teachers are going to see one-time bonuses of about $2,800. $1,000 of that, however, is contingent on them having had trainings related to COVID-19 or virtual instruction. So there is some question about whether school districts are maybe going to have to figure out how to offer those trainings to make sure that their employees will qualify for this bonus. Support staff like bus drivers and cafeteria workers will see their minimum wage increase to $13 an hour in the first year and up into $15 an hour in the second year of the budget. And they'll also receive bonuses just like all state employees.
So I wonder, you know, when we hear from Democrats and Republicans in the legislature, for instance, they are very vocal about what they may like or not like when it comes to things in this budget, and that includes things for education. But what about, what do state education officials and what do public school advocates see as good things in this budget?
There are a lot of individual items in this budget that I've heard described as wins. For one, there's a lot of federal COVID relief money that's being allocated for things like tutoring at schools, for professional development. Superintendent Catherine Truitt has an initiative to try to improve how teachers teach reading, and there's a significant amount of funding for that. And there are a lot of direct grants to schools. So that's the federal funding side of this. But there are also some things that state education officials were asking for because of the pandemic, like holding schools harmless if they lose enrollment this year. You know, we've seen enrollment drop at a lot of schools. It might be temporary, and this hold harmless clause would keep them from losing positions for teachers just because of a temporary loss in enrollment. There's also some increased recurring funds for things like students with disabilities, another $13 million, and a new appropriation to help put one school psychologist in every district. That's something where, you know, some smaller school districts out there have had to share a psychologist, and this is going to help create a new allocation for that. Another thing that's interesting, and this is sort of a plus and a minus, there's a provision in the budget that would no longer make teachers pay for a personal day. This is something that teachers have raised concerns about for years, that, you know, in order to take a personal day, they have to pay $50 to help pay for their sub. And this would change it so that if they give a reason, you know, if they need to go to a funeral or they need to move their kid into college, that they will no longer have to pay for that. But if they don't give a reason, they will have to pay for the full cost of the sub. And this seems like, you know, it might be directed at teachers that say take a personal day for a political action to take part in a sick out.
So let's talk about equity and funding the Leandro Remedial Plan. And I think it's probably worth just maybe taking a step back and reminding people what we are talking about when we say Leandro.
Leandro is it's a court case. It's a decades-old court case about equity in school funding in North Carolina. It's had several Supreme Court rulings. And currently, there is a judge monitoring it. And the parties to the case, which are some low-wealth school districts, who sued the state saying that, you know, students in their districts don't have the same access to an equitable education. Those school districts and the state have agreed on a remedial plan, and it calls for more than $5 billion in funding and additional funding for public schools. And it has a long list of different initiatives to help improve equity in education. The judge is calling on the state to fund that plan. Right now we're waiting because the judge just released an order. And this budget really only funds about half of that plan in the first year of the budget and less than half in the second year. And most of that's really in teacher pay and compensation. There are some items in the budget that you can find in the Leandro plan, things like advanced teaching roles, you know, paying teachers to take on more responsibilities, signing bonuses for teachers in lower wealth districts, some money for Smart Start. And another thing that's not exactly the same as what's in the Leandro plan, but related to it, is an item in the budget that puts $100 million for a, quote, low wealth supplement that would go to 95 counties in the state of North Carolina. And the idea is to help kind of like level the playing field, because some of the big urban districts that are wealthier offer these county supplements to teacher pay on top of the state base pay. That can be as high as $8,000 on top of the base salary in places like Wake County. And other counties like Cherokee County offers $0 on top of the base pay. So this is $100 million allocated to, you know, all but five of counties in the state to help them increase their teacher salaries above the base state pay.
And I think, as we've talked about before, the five counties that are not included in that plan happen to be some of the largest counties in the state and happen to lean very Democratic. So when this issue came up in the state Senate, for instance, there was some pushback from some Democrats who said, you are targeting Democratic-leaning counties with this particular plan. That's just to say there is perhaps a political side of this.
The five counties that would not receive a new supplement under this plan are Wake, Mecklenburg, Buncombe, Durham, and Guilford counties. Four of those counties currently have the highest local supplements in the state. Guilford County is not in those top five. So, you know, it does to stand to lose some competitive edge as other counties get more funding. I think what's less clear right now is exactly how it's been decided how much each of these counties will receive. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that there are some counties that are a little bit smaller, but have pretty large tax bases. Places like Chatham County, Alamance, Johnston, who do have really large local supplements right now, who are towards the top of the list in local supplements, and they would still receive some of this additional funding to increase their teacher pay. So I think that's where some of that criticism comes in, is like, you know, why are these Republican-leaning large counties still getting this, you know, large wealthier counties still getting this increase? And the funding is really based, it's really kind of based on the size of the county, because there's nothing that adjusts for per capita. So there are some counties that are smaller but quite wealthy that will still benefit, whereas these largest counties will not. You know, maybe what I would add overall about the Lowell supplement is the Lowell supplement will make teacher pay more equitable than it is now. I mean, right now the range in what teachers receive on top of the state-based pay goes from $0 to $8,000, depending on what county you live in. And, you know, with this supplement, that's going to narrow, and it's going to be more like $2,000 to $8,000. And a lot more school districts are going to be able to offer, you know, around the $4,000 range, more than what the state already pays. So a lot of teachers could really see significant pay increases through this supplement. I think there are just questions about exactly how it's allocated to each county and why.
We have been talking about and reporting on what is in this budget, but it's also worth mentioning that there have been months of negotiations leading up to this compromise. So what is not in this budget that may have been in those talks related to education?
One of the things I think a lot of teachers were really hoping to see was the return of master's pay. So this is additional pay, really a separate salary schedule for teachers who have a master's degree. This used to exist in North Carolina and right now only exists for teachers who've been grandfathered in on that policy, and younger teachers don't receive it. And that was in the House proposal for the budget. And so I think a lot of people are crossing their fingers that maybe that would come back, and it hasn't. Another thing is that there are no new step increases for veteran teachers. So basically the way the salary schedule works for teachers is that, you know, you get a little bit more every year for the first 15 years, and then you kind of hit a plateau. And so those teachers are still getting, you know, a 1.3% raise, but I think they were hoping to see, you know, gradual increases so that after you've reached an experience level, you're still making more pay each year. And that was not in the budget. Another big piece of the Leandro plan was robust funding for early education. I mean, really just transformational funding to help get more kids, especially at-risk kids, in pre-K programs. You know, there is some funding for pre-K in this budget, but it's not to the level that would really change the game for these young kids.
Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter.
I think some outsiders would be a little bit surprised that the Republican leadership got all the tax cuts that they wanted without giving in on Medicaid expansion.
Jason DeBruin is WUNC's health reporter. He's talking about the several months' worth of back and forth between Governor Roy Cooper and leaders in the legislature that led to this spending plan. One of the governor's priorities was to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, which did not make it into the budget. Jason's been sifting through what did make it in and what else didn't.
There certainly are aspects of Medicaid that have been expanded and in some cases significantly expanded. So it's not as though, you know, nothing happened on expansion, but, you know, the big ticket full expansion that they were looking for obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, well, let's get right into some of those bits and pieces. There's one for new mothers, right?
Yeah, and this is one of those that's pretty significant. It's going to affect a lot of people. So basically right now, if you are pregnant, you qualify for Medicaid if you know you make up to 196% of the federal poverty line. But that only applies to pregnancy-related matters, right? As soon as you give birth to your child, you no longer qualify, or basically no longer qualify. That now is changed so that mothers all the way up to 1 year postpartum can qualify for Medicaid, which is, look, as we all know, complications from pregnancy and certainly health-related matters related to childbirth don't stop the day you leave the hospital, right? I mean, some people would probably argue 1 year is not enough, but clearly 1 year is a lot better than what it was right now, which is, you know, essentially no time. And this will affect a lot of people. There's about half of all of the births in North Carolina are financed through Medicaid. So there's about 120 or so thousand births every year. So you're figuring in the neighborhood of 60,000 mothers, although of course it would only be for that 1 year, but you know, that's about 60,000 women every year. So pretty significant, you know, when you look at the numbers.
Another one is that there is a significant expansion to a program that helps families with children with severe intellectual or developmental disabilities. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is one that I've been looking into for several years, and I'm actually really interested in it. And it's a really important program. It's called the Innovations Waiver. And as you say, this is for families with children with severe IDD, so severe intellectual and developmental disabilities. Look, these are families that really need help. The services that they require are often quite expensive. And so there's this Innovations Waiver program that actually is quite generous. It doesn't cap until $135,000 per year. So the services that you can receive, you know, be it speech therapy, behavior therapy, other types of therapies that kids with severe developmental disabilities require can be funded through this. Unfortunately, there's just not enough money in it. So right now, there's not quite 13,000 of these slots that are available. They're all full. In addition to that, there's another 14,000 people that qualify, but there's just not enough money. Now, I should point out that when I say qualify, they've gone through the application process and the state has said, yes, you deserve funding. You deserve to be in this program. We just don't have enough money. Well, that is now being expanded by a full 1,000 slots. So yes, I mean, it's, you know, the backlog will go from 14,000 to about 13,000. When you look at it in that perspective, it's, you know, still not enough. But an expansion of 1,000 slots is definitely significant.
Yeah, well, and there are some other, I guess, small tweaks to qualification for Medicaid, right? I mean, there's one for parents who qualify for Medicaid because they care for a child, but then may lose that child to the foster care system. Can you explain that, what qualification there is there?
Yeah, that's right. So if you are very poor and you have a child, then you can also qualify for Medicaid. And when I say very poor, it's the income limit is $434 per month if you have one child. So we're talking about very poor people here. But if that does apply to you, then you do qualify for Medicaid. So not just your child qualifies for Medicaid, but so do you. Well, what could happen is that if you lose your child to the foster care system, your eligibility is, you know, you no longer qualify because, you know, the state basically said you no longer have that kid. Well, one of the main reasons why people might lose custody of their children is for drug abuse reasons. And if you all of a sudden no longer qualify for Medicaid, clearly it's more difficult for you to get into programs that might help you to get sober. And so clearly then it becomes only more difficult for you to try to get custody of your kid back. So in that scenario, if that were to happen to you, you were to lose your child to the foster care system, you would not also lose your eligibility to Medicaid. Now, this only probably applies to a few thousand people, so this isn't one of those major expansions, but it's sort of a recognition that you know, there's a group of people here who definitely could benefit from staying on Medicaid, and so there's a move to keeping them in the program.
Anytime that we go into the budget season, we do talk about pay raises. What pay raises are in here for or that have to do with healthcare?
There's one really important one for in-home and community-based care workers. We saw during the pandemic that this was one of the, you know, those frontline workers that were going into people's homes, you know, taking care of them in community-based in-home settings that we know were important, right? I mean, years ago, everybody was an institution and we thought that was the way to go. Well, fortunately, decades later, after a lot of research, we know that in-home care is far more beneficial to people with disabilities, to the aged, to a lot of different communities. And so there's a recognition that those kinds of workers are definitely needed. Historically, they've been kind of underpaid, and so it can be difficult to, even in good times, it can be difficult to find workers. Now, when there's workforce shortages, you know, all across the country, it's become even more difficult to staff these programs. Thanks to this budget, the minimum wage for in-home and community-based workers is going to raise to $15 per hour. Now, unfortunately, this is going to use federal money that is related only to the pandemic. So this is not necessarily going to go on forever, but at least for this, you know, workforce crisis that we're in right now, it certainly is going to help. And I should note also that, you know, we're looking at a nursing shortage of as much as 20,000 nurses over the coming decade or so. These are from estimates that were just released by the Shep Center. So, it's only going to get more difficult to try to find these qualified in-home care workers. And so, you know, this pay bump is just one way to hopefully try to attract good workers.
Jason DeBruin is WUNC's health reporter. You can read his and Liz's reporting at WUNC.org. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Will Michaels. Thanks for listening.